all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off with English Premier League football. Chelsea's Italian manager, Antonio Conte, is warning his top-of-the-table team faces a tough test when it travels to White Hart Lane later Wednesday evening to take on Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah, for sure, this is a great achievement for us, because to win 13 games in a row is not easy, above all in this league, and above all now, it's very difficult. And yeah, we are pleased for this, and we all know though, that we'll have a tough game, a really tough game against Tottenham, and for sure is a good team, a very strong team. For this reason, it's important to pay great attention and to try to continue our run. But for sure, the game it will be very tough.
Chelsea manager Antonio Conte mentioned his club's great run of 13 wins in a row. If the Blues of Chelsea can win again tonight against the Spurs of Tottenham, they'll equal Arsenal's record of 14 consecutive Premier League victories. Chelsea goes into the match with 49 points from 19 matches. That gives Chelsea a 5-point lead over Liverpool, which has played 20 matches. Manchester City has 42 points, Arsenal has 41 points, and Tottenham is in fifth place with 39 points. Once again, Chelsea manager Antonio Conte.
This league is very tough, and every game you can lose a point. For this reason, it's important to keep the right concentration, to be focused in every game. If you play against Tottenham or if you play against another team.
In English Premier League results Tuesday, Swansea scored a 2-1 road victory over Crystal Palace. The Swans of Swansea City recently fired American manager Bob Bradley and replaced him with Englishman Paul Clement. Stoke City defeated visiting Watford 2-0, and the Gunners of Arsenal fought back in the second half to draw 3-3 with host Bournemouth. French striker Olivier Giroud headed home a late equalizer after setting up two goals to complete the comeback. In other Premier League news, relegation strugglers Hull City, currently at the very bottom of the table with 13 points, have fired manager Mike Phelan. In a statement on Twitter, the club said the search for a replacement has begun and an announcement will be made in due course. Reigning Premier League champion Leicester City is currently in 15th place with 21 points. The Foxes of Leicester were one of the big sports stories of 2016, beating big odds to win the club's first Premier League trophy. So says Dan Friedel of the Voice of America's Learning English Department.
If you were an English Premier League soccer fan, you didn't have to spend too much money if you lived outside of London or Manchester over the last 20 years, because during that span, only teams from London or Manchester won the English Premier League title. The Foxes from Leicester City decided to change that trend this year, and they won the championship for the first time in the club's 132-year history. Before the season started, Leicester City was facing 5,000-1 odds for winning the championship, and I read a story the other day that put that into perspective. My hometown NFL team, the Cleveland Browns, before this season, they were about 240-1 odds. Leicester City was 5,000-1, and they managed to pull it off. It was really an exciting story to kind of kick off the sports year. I mean, we saw some of the teams and seasons that were mostly in 2015 coming to an end in the first part of 2016 with, for example, Peyton Manning winning the Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos and then retiring. The Leicester City Championship was really the first big club championship of the year. And it was a worldwide story because nobody expected such a big season from them.
The Foxes, of course, there was a sense that, at least for me, that they were going to drop eventually in the standings during their great run, but it didn't happen. And I think they caught a lot of football fans by surprise.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the fox and the hare and, you know, I mean, all these old stories. Which of these big behemoth teams that's lurking? You know, you have Arsenal, you have Liverpool, you have Chelsea, you have Manchester City, those kinds of teams that are always in the mix. Which one of them was going to go on a hot streak and catch the Foxes? And none of them could. The only thing that I think about the Premier League setup that's a little bit anticlimactic, if a team is ahead by a few games, by a few wins with only one or two games to go, they can win the championship not really on the field. So in this case, they were waiting for the results of a Tottenham game, which I think finished in a tie, which gave them the championship. But it is exciting to see teams win it on the field. So maybe they can find a way to make a change like that in the future.
And again, this current English Premier League season, the Foxes maybe not performing up to their standards of last season. I think they're struggling to avoid relegation at this point, but still a great story in the English Premier League, the Foxes of Leicester City.
Yeah, and they weren't the first club level team to win a first time championship in the U.S. top level soccer league, the Major League Soccer. The Seattle Sounders, which has been a strong team. I mean, Seattle is one of the most supportive audiences in Major League Soccer, finally won their first championship in shootout penalty kicks against Toronto. And that game actually had one of the most exciting moments of the year in extra time. The well-known U.S. national team player Josie Altidore went up for a header that looked like it was destined to go into the goal, and the Seattle goalie, Stefan Fry, leaped out of nowhere to save it and resulted in the game going to penalties and Seattle getting its first ever championship.
Yeah, the remarks after Fry made that spectacular save, hands of God and from the heavens, and where did that come from? And even Altidore was impressed with that great save. Altidore, by the way, was named the male Athlete of the Year for 2016 by U.S. Soccer, so he got some props. The Seattle Sounders, as Dan mentioned, won their first Major League Soccer title. One of the young stars on the Sounders, Jordan Morris, talked about Seattle lifting the trophy for the first time.
It's amazing. Toronto, all credit to them, made it really tough for us. They're a very good team, and playing them here, it's very difficult. To bring this trophy back to Seattle for the fans who deserve it and the whole city of Seattle. For me, it's unreal growing up here and being around the Seattle sports, you know, teams and following them and always wanting to be on this team and then to come and bring a championship back to be part of that team. It's hard to put into words.
That's Jordan Morris of the 2016 Major League Soccer champion Seattle Sounders Club. Jordan was also named the 2016 Rookie of the Year in MLS. More English Premier League football news now. Four Chelsea fans have been given suspended jail sentences and fined by a Paris court for committing racist violence when they stopped a black Frenchman who was boarding a subway train in the French capital in February 2015. Video footage showed the four Chelsea fans chanting, "We're racist and that's the way we like it," as they blocked Suleiman Silla from getting on the train. After the verdict, Silla said that justice has been served. Richard Barkley and William Simpson, who were not in court, were given 12-month suspended sentences on charges of committing racist violence and making chants of a racist nature. Josh Parsons and James Fairbame, who were in court, were handed suspended sentences of 8 months and 6 months, respectively, on similar charges. The four Chelsea supporters were also ordered to pay 10,000 euros to Silla. Well, as we look back at some of the sporty highlights from 2016, the spotlight shone brightly on Brazil in August, specifically the coastal city of Rio de Janeiro. That's where the games of the 31st Olympiad were held. The multi-sports festival featured many memorable moments, including the first refugee Olympic team. We'll hear from several Olympians now who reflect on Rio 2016, and we begin with a refugee swimmer from Syria, Yusra Mardini.
I want to say I'm really happy for what I achieved for helping refugees, and 2016 was a great year. I'm looking forward for 2017 to help refugees and to reach my goals. Happy New Year, everyone.
Another female athlete with fond memories of Rio de Janeiro is tennis player Monica Puig, who won Puerto Rico's first ever Olympic gold medal.
I had a fantastic 2016 season with winning the gold medal in Rio, and I look forward to working hard to bring more good results in 2017. I hope that everybody has a very happy new year.
On the track in Rio, Kenya's world record holder David Rudisha won his second consecutive gold medal at 800 meters.
The most amazing thing 2016 was Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games, where I defended my title. I'm looking forward to defending my world title. Happy New Year.
Another runner who earned glory and made history on the track in Rio is South Africa's Wade Van Niekerk, who set a world record of 43.03 seconds in winning gold at 400 meters.
The most amazing thing for 2016 was definitely the growth that I experienced. And I'm looking forward to 2017. We'll definitely be trying to beat every time and record. And you should have a blessed festival.
We'll also hear from the head coach of Fiji's gold medal-winning rugby sevens team and Jamaica's two-time Olympic champion, Elaine Thompson.
The most amazing thing about 2016 was capturing two golds at the Olympics. The thing I'm looking for the most in 2017 is to have another wonderful season.
Hi, I'm Ben Ryan, coach of the Olympic gold medal winning rugby sevens champions Fiji. I want to wish you all a very happy 2017.
The Voice of America, VOA.
Another runner who struck gold in Rio de Janeiro was Somalia-born Mo Farah, who competes for Britain. In fact, Mighty Mo struck gold twice in Rio, winning Olympic titles at 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters, just as he did at the 2012 Games in London. Mo Farah is only the second athlete in history to win the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters at two Olympic Games. The Flying Finn, Lasse Virran, did it at the 1972 Olympics in Munich and the 1976 Olympics in Montreal. The 33-year-old Farah also has five world titles on his impressive athletic resume, making him one of the greatest distance runners of all time. Mo Farah says he plans to compete at the 2017 World Championships in London, but then he'll turn his attention to the roads and the marathon distance.
Well, I want to do it. I believe, you know, I have to learn about the event. I have to understand what it takes. And, you know, I'm good on the track, and it's taken me years to be able to, you know, to get that out of myself. And the same thing on the road. It's nice to be able to, you know, see what I can do on the road. I ran my first marathon with 2:08. Was okay. Wasn't great. But to be able to mix with the guys, I need to run a lot faster than that.
We just heard Mo Farah say how he ran 2 hours and 8 minutes in his first marathon. That came at the 2014 London Marathon. That's well off the current world record of 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 57 seconds set by Kenya's Dennis Kimeto at the 2014 Berlin Marathon. As Mighty Mo said, he's going to need to run a lot faster to keep up with the best runners at the marathon distance. Meanwhile, the sports apparel and equipment giant Nike recently announced an initiative to train elite runners in a bid to break 2 hours for the marathon. Mo Farah is sponsored by Nike, and he says he's intrigued by the company's Breaking 2 project.
It's good in a way to see what they can do. If we can go sub 2 hours, and you know, I'm ambassador for Nike, and I work closely with the guys in terms of testing equipment and stuff. And it's great that you know they're looking that far ahead because you know I believe you know if you do get ready for it, it's possible. But I don't know how long it'll take. I don't know if it's going to be 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. But, you know, everything, you know, if you try hard, then it's possible. But it's great that, you know, Nike are putting a massive investment into it and see what they can do.
When it comes to the Olympics, we know what that guy can do. That's four-time Olympic champion Mo Farah of Britain.
Hello, this is Haile Gebrselassie. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup, live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOAsunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOAsunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And if you check out my Facebook page today, Wednesday, you'll see a photo of star guards John Wall of the Washington Wizards and James Harden of the Houston Rockets. They were named the NBA's Eastern and Western Conference Players of the Week, respectively. James Harden, of course, sports my favorite beard in basketball. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is the very clean-shaven Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Happy New Year, Andrew.
Happy New Year, Sunny. And I second that. I love James Harden's beard. I think it is a treasure in the National Basketball Association.
Well, Andrew, I understand the Williams sisters' question marks about them ahead of the Australian Open.
Yeah, just a day after we talked about Serena coming back and winning her first match since losing in the semifinals of last year's U.S. Open. A big shock was she loses to number 72 in the world, Madison Brangle, down at the ABS Classic in Auckland, New Zealand, by a score of 6-4, 6-7, 6-4. A very hard-fought match, but one that has a lot of fans kind of scratching their heads and wondering what's up with this, especially after it seems Serena was on a roll and such high hopes for her, not just at the Australian Open, but this entire year. So there's a lot of questions now on social media. Will she be in form for the Australian Open? What work does she have to do to get there? Or did she just have an off day? Now, Serena said in the post-match press conference that there were windy conditions, that they were very annoying, and she's thankful that it won't be like that in Melbourne. And she also said that she was trying to think of a word that's not obscene to describe how she played, but that was the word she settled on, was obscene. So a lot of question marks and talk about that. Also, a lot of talk, though, about Madison Brangle for beating Serena Williams. It's the first top three win in her career. And she has a Washington, D.C. connection. She actually plays on the Washington Castles World Team Tennis Team. We've talked about that on the show in the past. We've talked to owner Mark Ein. So Madison Brangle, well-known in D.C., certainly among tennis fans, and a big win for her. So a key career moment for her, so congrats to her on that.
What about Serena's older sister, Venus?
Well, Venus actually pulled out of the tournament, not with a loss, but with an injury. She had to pull out of the tournament early. And so there's a lot of questions about her health and whether she'll be healthy enough to play in the Australian Open and the severity of that injury. Of course, Venus has battled Sjogren's syndrome, which is an autoimmune disease. She's had to take some time off. She's had to battle back to form. And in the past year or so, a lot of fans noting how well she's been doing. She's risen to the top 10. She's made some runs to the semifinals in some Grand Slam tournaments. So there's a lot of question marks and a lot of concern about her health, but hopes that she'll be ready in about a week and a half, 2 weeks to go in Melbourne.
And you have to be physically fit to play in Melbourne. I mean, it gets hot down under.
Absolutely. Watching the Hopman Cup playing in Perth, I think they said it was about 40 degrees Celsius the other day. And at match time, it was about 30 degrees. So very warm temperatures down there. Of course, it's summer down in the southern hemisphere. Very warm conditions the players are going to have to deal with. And certainly in Melbourne, I expect it to be the same.
What else is trending in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, a sad anniversary that we're marking today. Stuart Scott, the popular ESPN broadcaster, he died 2 years ago today of cancer. So a lot of his fans remembering him on social media, noting that sports broadcasting here in the U.S. really hasn't been the same since he passed away. And also noting the speech that he gave at the ESPY Awards, ESPN Sports Awards, the speech he gave during his acceptance of the Jimmy V Award, which is the Jim Valvano Award for Perseverance. We've talked about that in the past. Jim Valvano, of course, a college basketball coach who died of cancer. And a lot of fans remembering, too, someone we lost this past year, Craig Sager, the sportscaster who died of leukemia just a few months ago. So a sad anniversary, but one that's bringing out a lot of good remembrances of a lot of his catchphrases. Booyah, as cool as the other side of the pillow is one that a lot of people were making mention of, one of his phrases he was known for. So while he has passed on, there's a lot of good memories being shared.
Kind of a sad story there about the death of Stuart Scott, but on a happier note, I understand there's a birth that we can talk about.
Indeed, the first baby born in Chicago, the city of Chicago, in 2017. She was delivered at 12:12 a.m. just after Chicago rang in the new year, and her parents, both massive Cubs fans, decided to name her Wrigley Rose.
Wrigley Rose.
Yes,
I like that.
So her first name is Wrigley. And in fact, the photo that's going viral on social media, her father sitting there with her and her mother, and he's wearing the 2016 Cubs World Series Champions t-shirt in the photo. So very big Cubs fans, her parents. Now, this name, it's a nice name, but not universally accepted, and it's a bit of contention on social media. You have people saying it's a great way to carry the Cubs' momentum into 2017. It's a great way to celebrate true baseball fans, and it's even people saying it's an adorable name. However, on the other side, people saying, I can't imagine growing up with a name like that because my parents were obsessed sports fans. People going as far to say it's a terrible name. And then one person saying, you're not even named after the team, you're named after a building. Although it'd be better, I guess, than naming your child Cubs or Chicago Cubs. But a lot of back and forth on whether Wrigley is a good name or not for this budding Cubs fan.
All right. Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up the January 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Happy 2017. to all our Voice of America listeners.
I get it.
And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Interfaith cooperation among religious communities around the world is a powerful counterbalance to hate, violence, and injustice, said U.S. Ambassador-at-Large for International Religious Freedom, David Saperstein. This is especially true in countries afflicted by sectarian violence. In Kenya, for example, when Islamist gunmen suspected to be al-Shabaab attacked a bus in December 2015 and demanded that Christians and Muslims be separated, the driver of the bus said that the Muslims on board refused to be separated from their fellow Christian travelers. They told the militants to kill them all or leave them all alone, which incredibly the gunmen in the main did. Yet one man, Salah Farah, was injured while shielding Christians from the attack and later died. His brother Rashid told media that he hoped Salah's example would encourage Kenyans to live as one community and promote religious harmony. In Israel, there are examples of peace building through interfaith education that schools like the Tabitha School in Jaffa or the six hand-in-hand schools in cities all across Israel provide to Jewish, Muslim, Druze, and Christian students. In Turkey, members of Istanbul's tiny Greek Orthodox community, visitors from neighboring Greece and other faithful, attended an epiphany service led by ecumenical patriarch Bartholomew I, the spiritual leader of the world's Orthodox Christians in Istanbul, where the Patriarchate is based. A ceremony to bless the waters was also held in Izmir, Turkey's third-largest city. It was the first official Epiphany ceremony there since the Greco-Turkish War ended in 1922, triggering a population exchange between Greece and Turkey. Although the Greek consulate in Izmir had organized a ceremony in 2006, it was the first time the Turkish government both approved and helped to organize it. It's a historic day here, and we're grateful to the local authorities and to the Patriarchate for making this happen, Tina Samolu, secretary of the Izmir Orthodox community, told Greek State TV. There is a power to be found when we advocate not just for people who share our beliefs, but also for those whose beliefs are profoundly different. When Jews advocate for Christians who are persecuted for their beliefs, when Christians advocate for Buddhists, when Hindus advocate for Muslims, when Muslims advocate for atheists, said Ambassador Saperstein. When we all recognize that if any one of us is not free to practice our beliefs, then none of us are.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.